The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
All right, coming to you live from our apartments, it is the Survivor Know-It-Alls with a huge improvement this week to talk about this insane Survivor final tribal council, this insane Survivor finale. We have Hannah Shapiro here, another zero votes finalist. Finally, I can talk to someone who has experienced the game like I have, who knows what day 39 is like, who knows what it's like to plead your case in front of the final tribal. Thank God Rob Cesternino is not here this week. But wow, what an insane episode of the show. You know, if you had told me yesterday that someone would win this show, you know, coming from Edge of Extinction, not having played the game for a month, I would have had a lot of trouble believing you, but it happened and it was wild. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm shouting, but I'm just so excited. Yeah, we share the same pain. So we're going to talk about all our pain in relation to this episode. And we've never spoken before.
No.
This is our first time ever speaking.
Yeah. So come for the analysis of Survivor and stay for any like awkward social dynamics between me and Hannah. We text occasionally. We'll like text like every so often.
We text often.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we don't have to make it. Okay. We don't have to make it. The awkward social dynamics are already happening. Welcome, guys.
No. We text a lot, but, you know, but this is literally the first time we've ever spoken.
Yeah. This is so exciting. Also, to preface this, I'm a fan from Token Sheets. Like, I'm a fan from back in the day.
You're a JT fan.
I was rooting surprisingly for the nerdy Jew in that combo.
Oh wow, that's wild. You're the one. You're the one person. Thanks for that. You know, once again, you know, the nerdy Jew loses in Survivor.
Once again, you're right, Julie.
Yeah, another no votes finalist. But Hannah,
yes.
You know, this is a crazy moment. I do feel like this is like a historic moment for Survivor where, you know, Chris's game is unlike any other winner's game we've seen in the past. He's benefited from an enormous fundamental twist in the game. Like, what is your take? Give me the hot take. You've just watched the episode. Where are you?
First of all, I want to say I had so much fun watching this episode. If you had told me Chris is going to win and it's going to be a phenomenal episode, I wouldn't have believed you, because I feel like Chris's win sort of negates most of the season. Most of the season story that you spent hours analyzing doesn't matter because of his win. But I still think it was a pretty incredible finale with a handful of mistakes that led to Chris sitting in the final three, being the first player ever to have played like 10 minutes of Survivor.
Yeah, 13 days. If you're counting day 35 and day 39, day 35 is when he gets back. Day 39, obviously, is the final tribal. 13 days of total game time compared to the usual 39. A full month that he did not play the game. And yes, like 10 episodes, you know, and it's crazy. Like the finale just completely invalidates all of the strategy. It's like
nothing matters.
Nothing mattered. Yeah.
I've sort of had an existential crisis watching this episode. I mean, literally nothing really matters.
Yeah.
If Chris was just going to come back in and win. And you saw it in Final Tribal. Half the jury just loves Chris because he got them fish and didn't vote him out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I still thought it was an incredible finale. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I did too. And I was almost like, again, like I was almost rooting for Chris, which I was like surprised for myself, you know, because I expected myself to be so fundamentally, you know, rooting for the most strategic player, the person who had dodged and weaved through the most votes, the person who had, you know, created the most alliances and made, you know, done the most blindsides, or Rick Devens, one of those two people. But it turned out that I was voted I Chris was so compelling, and he was so good too at telling his survivor story. And I tweeted this, you know, Rob Cisternino and I often talk about, you know, it's less about having a survivor resume and saying, yes, I did these moves, than it is about saying, this was my story for, you know, for why those moves mattered. Like, this is like, and Chris just every step of the way, when it's like after he got back, beat that gong, beat that drum, whatever the metaphor is, of like, this is my story. I had to make these moves. I had to knock out Devins because Devins was the best player. You know, he hyped up Devins' game. And it's funny because, like, a lot of people were criticizing all the other contestants for the way they hyped up Devins' game without any strategic kind of goal. Chris hyped up Devins' game as a way to set up his own game. And I mean, he just played a phenomenal, I mean, he had one of the most stellar finales of all time.
He played a phenomenal week of Survivor. Here's the thing. He created the most fantastic story, but here's where I think he won. His story was the story that every person on the edge of extinction hoped for.
Yeah.
Every person on the edge of extinction looked at Chris and said, you deserve to win because you're telling me what my story would have been. And all Gavin could do was say, he barely played, which pissed off half the jury, because half the jury saw themselves in Chris. And the people that rooted for Gavin, you know, Rick, we saw voted for him, Lauren, were the people that didn't relate to the value of the Edge of Extinction journey. So he had a compelling story that most of the jury wished was theirs. And ultimately, when you're on the jury, you see yourself as the winner, and they saw themselves in Chris. And I think that's why we saw Chris win.
I think that's a really phenomenal point. I mean, I had always kind of thought, like, well, he spent, you know, a lot of his time with them. He was obviously able to make bonds in such a way that he wasn't, you know, betraying them. And then, of course, a Chris win gives meaning to their experience, because they're not going to think that the Edge of Extinction
is pointless.
It's pointless because, like, they just suffer. Like, they're so invested in the Edge of Extinction. But I think that's great point. Oh, go ahead.
See, that's social awkwardness.
No, that's good.
Why do you think we saw 20 minutes after the Edge of Extinction challenge? We had a monologue from every single Edge of Extinction player saying what Edge of Extinction meant to them. And all those monologues became Chris's final tribal. I mean, it all was Chris. Also, if you want to talk about how huge this jury was, Reem has never spoken to Gavin or Julie. I mean, there's a sort of sad hilarity to how Chris won in a way. I really felt for Gavin and Julie, especially Gavin, since he clearly had some momentum, because we both know what it's like to be a losing finalist and to be looking at a jury full of people that you had to betray. Yeah. And so therefore they doubt your relationship. I mean, Chris talked in Final Tribal about his social game, but the complexity of a Survivor social game is they have to love you even when you vote them out. And he only had to make them love him. So I'm both impressed by his storytelling and how he connected to the Edge of Extinction people. And also, I think we're probably both frustrated in a similar way.
Well, I think Gavin really put it, you know, excellently with his sort of saying, you know, like, if you're talking about classic Survivor here, classic Survivor is lasting 39 days. Classic Survivor is voting people out. I would have loved to have been on the Edge of Extinction, you know, healing my bonds, you know, healing the wounds with Aubrey and healing the wounds with Eric. But I've been in this game playing. Like,
do you remember who reacted after that? It was Julia, who, because every defense that Gavin had, as brilliantly as he articulated it, dissed half the jury.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because Gavin's best argument is he only played like 9 days plus a little bit of Survivor. But every person that only did that is then offended. He had a lose-lose. His best argument, however it may have resonated with the fans, is going to offend half the jury, which is a brilliant conundrum.
Yeah. Well, it's true. It's true. And it's interesting. Like, I wasn't thinking of the fact that the people who were the ones who voted for Gavin were the people who had spent the least time on the edge. You had Devins, you had Lauren Wentworth.
Who Devins maybe was never on the edge. Lauren yeah. was never on the edge. Least then, time. None
and Aurora, of it. And Aurora was the other one who spent very little time there as well. I was surprised by Victoria not voting for Gavin. Were you surprised by that at all?
That was my biggest shocker of, I think, of all the votes and how they played out was Victoria. Because also Victoria seemed annoyed by Chris throughout Final Tribal. I think Victoria, clearly I wish we both had seen more of her. I mean, obviously a respected player. For Chris to even be able to semi-pitch for them to get her out before him, I wish we had seen more of this. We saw Victoria controlling the votes, but we didn't see that everyone understood it. And I wish we had a little bit more of that.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking I want to go back to like that vote in a minute. But,
yes.
But ultimately, do you think that this was, from your perspective, was this the right decision from the jury or was this the wrong decision from the jury?
That is a tough question because I can't say that if I had not been on, if I was in the season
right.
and I lived on EOE with Chris and he brought me fish and he did that, would I have voted for him? Potentially. As a viewer and as a super fan who respects the mind-bogglingness of having to live in that headspace for 39 days, I'm leaning towards wanting to vote for Gavin in this hypothetical thing in which I get to place a vote.
Yeah.
I kind of have a belief, I mean, maybe this is me as a bitter losing finalist, that there is essentially no 100% right winner. I think in most cases, it is a matter of perception and how the jury views them and what, I just don't, it's not a math problem. It's not, it's 2 + 2 equal 4. It's what games did they play? What games did the jury see them play? And then what do you value most at the end of the day? I don't think a right winner exists.
No, I'm with you. And part
I
of
lost.
It,
yeah. I lost. That's probably why I think that.
I mean, on my season, I think they picked the right winner. But I think on most seasons, that's probably true. Where they, you know, it's and so much of it is just like who you're cast with, right? Like it's like people's biases and how people relate to different people and like what kind of things people value. Like maybe one season people value, you know, twists, and another season people value alliances. I mean, in my blog, I wrote, check out my blog, give me your clicks. In my blog, I wrote that it was kind of this battle, but for the soul of the series almost, you know, and I think in the last couple of seasons, we've seen how this show has become more and more focused on big moves and idol plays and advantages. And this was, Chris was the person who, you know, best took advantage of the biggest twist the game has ever seen, right? This Edge of Extinction twist is the most really fundamentally game shifting twist that I would say that the show's ever implemented. Chris took advantage of that twist. He took advantage of idle twists. You know, he really maximized that component. And then you have Gavin, who's the guy who never received a single vote, who was on the right side of every vote except one, like playing the most classic old school game of all. And like, maybe that was a little bit boring, you know, like maybe that was like that worked for like a type of TV of 10 years ago. Now, listen, I'm like you. I would have voted for Gavin, too. Again, like hypothetically seeing it through my TV screen, I would have voted for Gavin as well. But it does come down to the jury, right? Because like you can't fault Chris for
the
taking
a jury of 100 people.
Yeah, exactly. The jury of 100
There's 100,000 people. When Jeff was reading the votes, I kept laughing because I was like, why are there so many votes? Yeah. Because it was so close, we got – how many votes did we get? There's so many votes.
Well, we saw Gavin. Gavin got 4 votes, right? Julie got 0. I mean, so, and then we saw like 6 of Chris's, I think, right? So it was like 10 votes we saw, which actually is not the most votes that we've ever but yeah, it was such a huge jury. But it's like you don't blame Chris for the win. If you're going to blame anyone, it needs to be the jurors. And yeah, like of course the jurors are invested.
It's kind of like don't hate the players, hate the game. I'm not even sure that I fully blame the jury as much as, I mean, the twist won the season.
Right. That's right.
I can't blame a jury. I can't blame Reem, who never spoke to Julie, who never spoke to Gavin, for voting for the handsome tall man who brought her fish every day and told her she was lovely. I mean, how do you blame the juror? Were you surprised that some of the more strategically minded players like Aubrey or I think Dave too. Were you surprised that they voted for Chris, who played so few days?
Yeah, I mean, Dave played a big chunk of days, but
but they voted for someone who played so.
That honestly is the most surprising thing to me. I mean, almost as like a test. I mean, and I guess like, you know, if you're Aubrey and you've spent most of your time on this season on the edge, like again, like I think you really articulated it perfectly. Like this was the dream vision that each of them had for themselves. Like,
yes.
I'm going to come back into the game. I'm going to beast out. I'm going to be like this magical competitor. And so he was really their representative. I really noticed that juries love underdogs, and it is probably because like, that's them. Like they're like, it's like fighting against this power structure that screwed them over. Yeah, I think that's a really, I mean, it is interesting. You would think that someone like Dave, who has, you know, been such like a shrewd, and Aubrey as well, in both their seasons were such shrewd, like political manipulators, would maybe, you know, award that skill set, who have had that 39 day slog in Aubrey's case, I think like a 38 day slog in David's case.
I cut that short.
I mean, were you surprised at that?
I do wonder if it had been Victoria or Lauren, was there a person in their eyes that could have, they would have respected enough to give that vote? Was the problem not that they didn't respect the slog, but is it that they didn't respect Gavin or Julie enough? That is a question that I guess I would then follow up to my own thought.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Gavin's game for a second.
Let's talk about it. Sweet Gavin. He ever said he thought this was the dream. Turns out the dream was his lady. I cried. That's so cute.
Yeah.
That's not the part you care about, though.
Well, no, we can talk about that. You know, like
let's talk about all the weddings.
Yeah. Yeah. So much love blooming on this
Chris
season.
And his wife got married 2 weeks ago. I thought Dave was going to propose to Leah on the finale. They cut to her. I was like, here comes the ring.
Oh my gosh. You can't, that move is done. Like, unless, you know, that's over. Unless you're going to go.
He pulls out a shirt that says, I heart Leah. Isn't that like, because I heart Rot? Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to. Anyway, sorry. I interrupted you. Let's talk about Gavin's game.
You missed the most important wedding of all, which is, you know, Joe and Sierra.
I told Sierra when I saw her, I said, your engagement photos are too beautiful. You guys are both so tall and handsome. I can't look at these photos. They're so beautiful. Congrats to you on your wedding as well.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Not really a part of this season, but I think it is.
But I think it's an important thing to discuss on here. Okay. Gavin's game.
Well, yeah, Gavin's game. So what did we see? I mean, we honestly like didn't see that much of Gavin's game. Like we know that. Like, what do we know about him? Like we know that he was
a challenge beast.
He did two immunities.
He only won two? I feel like he won more. Julie won two.
I think that I thought that Gavin said that he won two immunities.
Oh, maybe two. Okay.
Yeah.
He won two. Maybe not beast then. He won challenges. He had tight alliances, a majority alliance from Kama, from Kama Strong. He seemed to be the person, I always noticed that he was always the person that people felt like they needed to include. It was always like, I can't make this move without checking in with Gavin.
Yeah, he really was the bridge between everyone. I mean, when Lauren was pitching her blind side, you know, of, I don't even remember who, Aurora, I guess it was.
Yes. Victoria was like, got to check with Gavin.
Yeah, no, but Lauren pitched it to Gavin, and Gavin barred it to Victoria. So it was like he was like the hinge in a lot of. I mean, when Julia was pitching her blind side of Eric, you know, Gavin was the guy she went to. So it did seem like, and honestly, I really think a lot of Gavin's problem is that he's kind of a reticent guy, and he's not some like big flashy player. And we're in a big flashy era, and then, you know, like you have to see people making moves. And I think that Gavin played this role that a lot of like, you know, grinding strategists play as that's like one of the hardest things to do is be in the middle of every sort of power dynamic.
Like last season with Mike, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's okay. A great comparison. But like, it's not a, it's not as noticeable. It's certainly not as noticeable to the jury.
It's definitely a position in which you hurt a lot of people. The game he was playing was one in which he personally burned many people. And when you're in a season where a guy comes back who everyone loves, it's sort of like you have so much blood on your hand, but not because you did it in a fun, flashy Rick way, but because you actually did it in a subtle, sort of potentially hurtful way.
Yeah, people aren't, I mean, it's a great point about like the fun, flashy Rick thing. It's like people aren't as pissed off about getting idled out as they are about getting voted out. Because when you're voted out, it's like the group has ejected you. Like they have come together to remove you from the game. Whereas when you're idled out, it's like some like crazy flashy thing happened and I was like kicked out. Like, you know, the wheel of chance spun around and landed on me. Like it's
also,
not like.
I think with Gavin, when you build such close relationships that you're voting people out before people are coming after you,
yeah.
It feels like more of a betrayal versus if you're playing a bigger game and people are already gunning for you. If you're gunning for someone and they get you first, that's less hurtful than if I look at you and I say, I love you so much, and then I get you out. Which yeah. I think is more what Gavin and Julie both seem to do.
Yeah, you're really getting me worked up about like about Gavin having deserved to have won. Like, it's
I'm not even necessarily saying that. I'm just saying I think I can relate to his gameplay, and I can't imagine being on a season where like. I don't know who the equivalent would be my season. Like Taylor comes back and no one's mad at him. Like, I just can't imagine.
Yeah, what would you do? But, you know, the thing you would do is you would vote that person out. And what was incredible was that these guys had a shot and they didn't do it.
Can we please talk about all the mistakes that were made that let Chris get there?
Well, let's hit briefly.
Oh, we're slowing down. Sorry.
Let's hit briefly Julie's game and then we'll go back and talk about all the mistakes that everyone made. So it really didn't seem like the jury respected Julie's game at all. I mean, was there anything that Julie could have done from that vantage?
I don't think once she got to Final Tribal, I think that she was going in there with if you want to talk about an uphill battle, I mean, I will put this on myself in order to talk about her. As someone who occasionally was emotional.
I'm right there.
I think when someone comforts you and you then hurt them by voting them out, they're extra angry because they felt like we saw it with like Dawn.
Yeah.
You know, if you're comforting someone, if you're finding their teeth, whatever you're doing for them, you feel like you've taken care of them.
Just take some random example, like the most extreme example of that.
I took it extreme. And then you vote. And then, you know, they vote you out. There's an extra hurt there. And I think where Julie took it to the next level where, I mean, I'm sure people will come at me, but I don't think either one of us did is a lot of times Julie's emotions caused votes to go haywire.
Right.
And I think that people didn't just see it as she was emotional and then betrayed them. They saw it as, I mean, Julia was rightfully upset. It's like your emotions almost accidentally got me out.
Yeah.
And so as savvy, I think Julia is very smart. I think she, you know, she did work her way through the game in a lot of ways that we respect Gavin for. I think you always have an uphill battle as a woman, as an older woman, as a mom. That's always a tougher sell. We've seen that in the history. But I do think there are reasons people were upset. But props to her for navigating a very intense game and winning two immunities and having a hilarious daughter that reads mean Reddit comments. I mean,
really? Does she? That's great.
Oh my God. Her daughter is so funny. You should all go to Julie's social media. She reads Reddit comments. It's so fun. But I do think the reasons she lost were pretty clear.
Yeah.
And I don't think she could have pulled it around at Final Tribal.
Yeah. And it seemed like, you know, her attempt at saying that her, like, you know, her emotions were her strategy. It just was a non-starter for her.
Yeah. That wasn't the best approach probably.
So let's go back. Chris comes into the game. This is the final six and this is the Victoria vote. And like, yeah, right. What a series of screw ups. Walk me through this.
So many screw-ups. I will say this. I'm going to preface this with two main points that I think we should drive home as players who have played that to give insight to the fans. The first one is every move that you sit at home and think that is so dumb, why they do it. Every dumb move is counterbalanced by someone playing better than you can see through your TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time you're like, oof, it's because someone's playing well. And the second thing is, we're talking about the last week of Survivor. You are so depleted. You are so exhausted. I'm sure every person that played a dumb move, especially our poor Lauren, if you told her, if you laid this out to her before the game started, she would go, of course, don't do that. But when you're hungry, when you're tired, and when you're at that point of mental exhaustion, I think we just got to set the scene a little bit. But
well, and you're so close to the finals. You can like taste that million. And you're like, but there's not that much strategy to implement anymore. There's six people left. Your brain is just like going in circles, like, you know,
so
like spinning.
Many circles. Yeah. I mean, I made a million billion mistakes at the episode before the finale and the finale that when I look back, I'm like, oh man, I knew not to do that. I knew to go in that direction. How could I have even thought that? But when you're out there, your mind is a whirlwind. But there was a lot of mistakes. I think both Lauren and Rick, I mean, both two big mistakes. As I love Rick, and I rooting for Rick to get to the end and win. I mean, I really feel like this season has been his story. And from a storytelling perspective, it would have made a lot more sense for Rick to have won.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that idol play for Chris, first of all, not going for Chris. There was like two layers. Everyone going for Victoria, who as strategic and amazing as she's been, is not a physical threat at this point in the game. Instead, going for her and not going for Chris, and then Lauren burning her idol, which throws the idol back in the game. I mean, I don't know what to make of it other than to say she was at a point of mental exhaustion. Chris came in and I think really was ready, was a little bit clearer in his head of right. how to play because he hadn't been spinning for all these days.
Yeah.
Came in and somehow, you know, sold shit as diamonds.
Yeah. No, he seemed like he had this like crazy like focus. You know, he just seemed so chill. He seemed so completely in control of himself. Everyone else was kind of like in their like schemey, like, you know, strategy mode. And he was like just like he was like this Zen warrior, like walking through the battlefield. And it does like the game just wears you down with just like the constant plotting, the constant duplicity. And to like get a break from that for a month and then get to re-enter is like such
also
a,
the pain of having to vote out good friends.
Yeah, it's hard. It is hard to vote people out, especially your first time. It's like really like you feel terrible about it. You're yeah. ending their adventure.
What do you make of the move?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think through it from, you know, what is their perspective? Like, so yes. both Devins and Lauren are fundamental to keeping Chris in this game, right?
Yes.
There, right? Because Devins votes for Victoria instead of for
and
Chris.
I was more referencing too. Not only that, but he keeps well, his half idol. Of the, yes.
No, yeah, sure. But let's just talk about that final six.
Okay,
vote,
that final where, six
like,
vote.
I mean, it's actually part and parcel of the same thing, so we can talk about them together. At the final six vote, though, like Devins votes for Victoria over Chris, and that means that the majority of the votes after the Devins votes are canceled are on Victoria over Chris. And then, as like, you know, insurance, Lauren also plays her idol for Chris, which is like you get the sense of like, you know, from our perspective, at least from my perspective, I think like, oh, the guy who comes back from the edge, like you've got to vote him out immediately. Like that's the other than Devins, that's the biggest threat.
So I'll give Rick a little bit of a pass on this,
right.
though,
Why?
Because if Rick had played his idol at six,
right.
he if Chris had won at five, then Chris
right,
potentially
gives
him the idol half.
Yeah.
Who knows if Chris would have actually given it to him? He gives him the idol half. That's at least an incentive for me to understand why Rick kept him in. In addition, Rick wins against everyone. So he's a little bit less thinking of me and Chris. And I see why he sort of buddied up. It's Lauren whose move at six is, and the rest of them, you know, going after Victoria. That's a bit more confusing. Rick, at least I semi see the incentive in that.
Well, it's a great. You know, I was trying to think of like who Rick would want to have most in the game in order to maximize his own chance of winning. But you're right; it does make sense. Like if Chris wins the immunity challenge at five, then like Devins has still got his like idol half and can be like, okay, give me the other half. And maybe Chris does, maybe Chris doesn't. But you're right; there's more.
There
of
is
a,
incentive there.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, well, I mean, we'll talk about it. I'm not jumping, but we'll
no,
talk
no.
about it. Versus no. versus him giving the idol half back, which I think was more his mistake than keeping him around at six, because he didn't know that he'd find another idol the next day. And I mean, he didn't know all these factors. And so considering everyone was against him, it makes sense for him at that point. Poor Lauren, though. I mean, her tears afterwards, I think, spoke the most to me as a former player, which is just the exhaustion of immediately knowing you made a
yeah.
mistake.
Yeah.
But realizing, oh, this is a mistake I would never make if I wasn't in this headspace and this exhaustion. She's played a brilliant game coming from the bottom, being a less you person that has weaved her way into this scenario, sitting
without
on that,
getting voted out until the
without
final.
Without getting voted out, sitting on the idol during tribals where her name was up in the air. Yeah. She really, I hope she's not reduced to this one mistake, even though it's a really big one, on par, I think, with Eric giving up immunity to.
Well, it is because it's company. Like she was guaranteed a spot in the final four, which is basically now as far as you can go through the social game. And
she could have potentially won. I mean, but that's the question. Does she win again without? But I think that it would have been a big enough move for the jury had she saved herself in five, propelled herself, won fire. Who knows? Gavin may still have won in that scenario, or Rick or Chris. We don't know exactly, but this was really
her big swing. Having the magic ticket that gives her a lock on the final four and then sacrificing it. It's like if it were even like one vote out, if it was the final seven, you could be like, well, you know, who the heck knows? But like, just like
for
knowing
a person she should have wanted out then. Yeah. That's what's so hard to – it's hard. I think Victoria is arguably this season the most I would say most in line with all the analytical – podcasters. I think she reflects. I think she's the reflection of the sort of, intelligent chess player from home. And the fact that she was like, it's so obvious to get Chris knocking her out. I was like, well, it's a bonanza now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. And Chris really like used that. Like I know what the people on the jury are thinking.
Oh
like,
my really gosh. Well, let's talk about that for a second, because we both lost at Final Tribal. Yeah. We got zero votes. Nobody in the jury voted for us.
Right. Your jury was bigger than mine, though, to be fair. You know, it would have been easier for you to pick up a vote than for me.
You're right. As the biggest failure, I'll say this. Perception is everything. And people afterward were like, yo, did you think you could beat so-and-so? Yes, at many times I did. And that's why I made the choices I made. But then you get to the end and you realize the jury has this sort of perception of everything. And that perception is so important. And Chris must have known that. And using that as a tease, even though everyone knew what he was doing, is such a smart strategy. The way he said, oh, well, Kelly really is rooting for you and wants to see you make a move. I mean, if I had gotten someone who had been hanging out with the jury to come on to and been like, oh, you know what? Like Zeke really wants you to do this, or like, you know, Michelle thinks you're not doing enough of this. Oh my gosh. Even if I knew it was a lie, that's the first bit of info from the jury I've gotten.
That's a really, really, really great point. And because you're right, it's like you just like you have no idea what the jury's thinking. You speculated about it endlessly. You're so wrong. You think the jury like acknowledges your, you know, in our own heads, we're all playing. You know, everyone who's there all 39 days is just like, you know, has to do so much to get there. And in our own heads, we're all playing games that are, you know, if not worthy of winning, certainly worthy of some, you know, a couple votes.
Yeah.
As you said,
you're the protagonist of your own story. The winner's edit or whatever edits haven't come out yet. You don't see the thing. Sorry, I interrupted you. But
No. I mean, that was what you said.
Yeah,
it's like basically you're always – like we all see our moves. And then, you know, you just don't have a sense. Like I remember I dramatically missed – I mean, I didn't think I was going to win against JT, but I did think I might get a couple of votes because I thought the jury would have a perception of me that they just didn't have. You know, I thought that they would – I think I was probably like Gavin, where like I thought that they would see me kind of like playing this social connector role. And for them, I was like the hanger-on. Anyway, you know, it's probably a very similar thing.
Yeah, I can relate to that on some level, I think.
Yeah. But it is, it's like for Chris to know really what the jury is thinking, what the jury is looking for is a huge advantage for him, but a brilliant game move for him to leverage that strategically.
Yes. I keep saying it as a joke, but for the 1 week Chris played, he played brilliantly.
He did.
I'm not trying to take away. I thought it was so funny at the finale, how Jeff Probst was like, you know, you voted, you betrayed someone. Does it haunt you? I'm like, you're talking about his one, his like 2 days he was there.
Right.
like, oh yeah, you, in the week you played, you really cut a lot of throats.
Yeah.
There's like, I keep ping ponging between the silliness of the twist winning and being genuinely impressed during the finale we just watched. If I just watched this finale, I would say, Chris deserved the win 1,000%. Hands down, this was the most brilliant thing. I just keep having flashbacks to spending months on this season and wondering what the point was.
I know, it's really crazy. Like literally like every single move after Chris was voted out until Chris ran into the game was
pointless.
Meaningless.
If yeah. anyone, I mean, Keith had a pretty big impact on the season by giving Chris the disadvantage so yeah. he didn't come in earlier.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. If Chris had come in earlier, that's right. He probably wouldn't have won.
And Keith,
or maybe he would have broke one again.
Keith is the key player of the season.
Yeah, it, that's
I
funny.
Keith the fishy.
Fishy to Keith. That's right. Joe, by the way, lost.
Oh,
I mean, the joke about this season from when we first started hearing spoilers about it,
yes.
you know, was that this was a season designed for Joe. And he really did almost come back into the game. Like, you know, is this how close do you think Joe's near miss was? If Joe comes back, does he have like Chris's success?
Yeah, sorry. I got so distracted by having fun ringing this bell.
Well, it was well done. I'm really impressed. Yeah.
To Hannah, a true know-it-all, Rob, that I may or may not have missed half your question. You're saying, if Joe had landed the ball in the hole.
Which was, he was like, and I really think
oh,
like,
yeah.
he rushed because he saw that Chris was ahead of him. But like, if Chris had been a second behind, I think Joe wins that.
That is a fantastic question. First of all, what a bro showdown to get back in the game. I think there was a shot of Joe, Eric, and Chris all, you know, trying to get their balls in a hole. And there's just something dirty and weird about this whole bro showdown. I'm not saying what it is. I have a very clean mind. But yeah, it became a bro showdown. Honestly, we'll never know. I know that's a cop-out answer, but Chris did a lot of smart manipulation work that we haven't necessarily seen from Joe. So do I think Joe's path to the end is similar to Chris's? I don't think so. But could Joe win his way or idle and whatever? Was this Joe's season to lose still with that ball? Yeah. So both yes and no, which is a cop out. But I don't think Joe gets to the end the way Chris did, because Chris did it with a manipulation savvy that I think was not expected from the EOE returnee.
Yeah. What do you think of this half idol? So I was a really big fan when Devin's got the half idol coming back at the merge. What did you think of Chris getting the half idol coming back at the final six? That could, you know, was only good at the final five, basically.
I thought it was dumb. I love that you give Rick the half an idol, because that person has a target. I love that you help him build a relationship when he comes in at the merge. Coming in at final six is a big enough leg up towards getting you to final three. It seems kind of unfair that you get a leg up and a cookie.
I mean, in general, and I think almost everyone is opposed to idols having, you know, being allowed to be played at the final five. You know, I think, you know,
with the fire twist,
right? With the fire twist, the fact that you should have to survive one vote. But of course, like, that's probably not going to change, because, you know, I think that the show benefits, you know, even if like the purity of the game doesn't benefit, the show benefits from someone being able to like get their magic tool. And I really think, I mean, I've been surprised on social media by, I mean, I actually expected people to really hate this, and I've been sort of surprised by how much people were into it. You know, I think a lot of people were cheering for Chris. A lot of people feel this is a really good win. And I really think that the dichotomy comes down to like what Survivor means to you. And if you truly believe that this is only a show that's based on social strategy and like classic Survivor, like this is going to be upsetting to you. But if you think that, you know, I've kind of like resigned myself to this sort of like chaotic Calvin Ball version of Survivor where, you know, a new advantage pops up and you got to race and get the advantage first. And then you do your thing with that. And then the next thing pops up. You know, I think it'd be miserable to play. You sort of played that with in 33. But I mean, I played it to a lesser extent in 31.
Yeah, most, I think most idols late in the game were played incorrectly on my season.
Yeah.
So it was a little different because everyone kept misfiring. I think a lot of the reason people might not hate this win is, let's give a little bit of credit to Chris. His story was super compelling, this finale. I mean, for a handsome, tall, white dude, he was sort of, he sort of was this like lovable, smart, underdog who, I mean, when he, I really think his best, I mean, one of his best moments was taking off the necklace, giving it to Julie and just going to fire. And the brilliant part about this is he gets credit for taking out the biggest competitor, but Rick is not the best fire maker.
Right.
So it's not like he had to go up against the best fire maker. It was sort of like the boldest move with the highest, like best look, but not even like the most risky, as bold and great as it was. And I just thought this was brilliant. It was a stand up and cheer moment. I don't know that he beats Gavin without it. Do you?
No, I think you might be right. I think that was the thing that cemented his, because otherwise he's like, he's kind of, you know, he won an immunity. Great. You know, he kind of, he didn't win an immunity. I'm sorry. Oh no, he won the last immunity, but yeah, like he's kind of like a middle of the road contestant without that, but it's such a big move.
And he takes it away from Gavin.
Yeah.
We're saying the same thing, but to take that moment away from Gavin, it reminded me of my season. Everyone was talking about David Wright. If you could be the person that gets the credit for shooting David Wright in the head, which is what Adam got the credit for, Chris Hammonds, whether it's accurate or not, believe that Adam was the reason David Wright left the game. And his final speech my season was, "You are the guy that got the guy out that we all wanted to win." And Chris took that away from Gavin. Gavin got the Chris Hammonds, "You got this guy out" speech moment.
Yeah.
And that was so big.
Yeah. And it's huge. And, you know, we talk a lot about how doing things in front of the jury is so important. And it's like this, I mean, granted it was, you know, in the voting booth where the jury couldn't see, but it was
crazy.
Yeah. It was a big flashy spectacle. And it was such a cool move. It really, really was such a cool move. You know, obviously a lot of people are thinking of Dominic and Wendell and, you know, very different scenario there.
Very different. Yeah.
I mean, Dom lost by zero votes, you know, like
Dom thought he could beat Wendell, which he doesn't seem stupid because he almost did.
Yeah.
And Wendell was incredible at fire, too, I believe. So it's a different. I loved how they were squished in the voting booth so that Jeff, instead of sitting on his perch, sort of was huddled over them, which made his commentary even funnier, because Jeff Probst's commentary is always like, "You will regret this. This is the biggest moment," which is fine if you're sitting separate from them. But there was something hilarious about him, like leaning over them being like, "Is this the moment that you're going to regret for the rest of your life?" It was just so funny to me.
Well, that threw me. And what's our next topic? So the
final
four fire making challenge, Chris beasts it out. It's a huge moment in the show. You know, he's got a fantastic final tribal performance. A lot of people on Twitter were saying the jury seemed particularly angry. I didn't feel that way. I mean, it was such a big jury that it was hard to, like, you know, manage. I didn't think they seemed angry. Did you have a perspective?
I mean, I do believe Julie said, "Thank you guys for being so kind." So I do think it must have felt there's some level of kindness there. I also did like how this is sort of why it was surprising Victoria didn't vote for Gavin. But I do like that they shut down Chris calling Gavin a goat.
Yeah.
I think the jury was like, no. We will be the judge. You don't get to kind of make a very sideways, weird attack. There were moments where I feel like because they all stewed in their anger and Edge of Extinction, usually you get voted out. You have time to drink and to reflect and to come to some inner peace. But I think because they sat in dirt and starved up until like a few days ago, I mean, the saltiest comment to me, and I respect her and I don't blame her, was from Aubrey, surprisingly, saying like, I mean, and also I don't blame her because she really was never really given a shot, but she seemed the most angry. Like, you know, I was sort
like
of
her taxidermy thing. Like
her taxidermy thing.
Right.
If anything stands out, unless you can think of an angrier comment, but I think a lot of that is she felt like she didn't really get to play. And then she had to sit in that on Extinction.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it must. I can't imagine like being there, knowing that you're not likely to win against like these like giant guys who are super athletic. Knowing that like, but you can't quit because like that would be quitting. What a nightmare that would be. I mean, like, you know, like what a horrible, horrible nightmare. Just like stuck out there, knowing you're destined to lose, but not being able to do anything about it. So yeah, I mean.
To answer your question though, it's not that I felt like there was an anger or a bitterness, but I definitely felt the freshness of a lot of them recently having left starvation.
Right.
If that That's makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. And then also like they didn't, you know, they weren't necessarily as eloquent maybe as some juries because they haven't had time to like, well, I'm sure they've had a lot of time to endlessly discuss things.
But I don't think they've had time to mentally recover from just being in it almost.
Right.
I mean,
they only really lost like a few days before.
I mean, and that's, I mean, that's harsh. That's hard.
Yeah. One of the things that I think really helped Chris the most was the very existence of Rick Devens. And I think the fact that
people were
so fixated on Rick Devens being in the game made Chris seem less like this giant threat to them and more like a tool they could use to eliminate the real threat of Rick Devens. And as a result, I think that kind of gave him like some maneuverability when he first landed.
Rick, I mean, the Edge of Extinction person doesn't get to the end without someone as big and quote unquote threatening as Rick Devens. If Chris won because Rick Devens, they couldn't get him out earlier. If Rick Devens was gone, the Edge of Extinction person doesn't make it to the end.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if Rick had been not been there at the final six, who was home? Who went home right before him? Was it Aurora?
Maybe. Who went home? I'm trying to think. Picture the jury. Yeah, I think Aurora.
I think if Aurora had not gone
Let us know angrily if we're wrong about this. Yeah. Be like, you dummies.
Yeah, no, that's about how it'll go. It's not that way at all. I think that if Aurora had not gone home and Rick had gone home, I think that Chris is definitely not making it to the end of this.
I mean, Rick Devens, I mean, props to Rick Devens. I mean, Rick Devens came so close. I know we talk about, oh, should Gavin have won? I mean, I know Rick Devens has gotten an absurd amount of unnecessary hate, but I mean, I thoroughly loved watching Rick Devens. I found him dynamic. I found him the joy he took in sort of torturing the people who were attacking him. I mean, not to harp, I know you deleted the tweet, but it's interesting that you brought up Angelina making the fake idol for Elizabeth versus Rick Devens making these fake idols. Allison, sorry. And you said you were thinking, is it a gender thing? I do think there's a gender component, but I was
just raising that they were present, that they were presented differently, or not even presented, but just considered differently by the people.
Well, here's why I feel like Rick Devens, when he started crying, it was highlighted something that I understood, which is Rick Devens got told, you're going home. You're going home. We don't want to talk to you. We don't want to worry. That exhaustion. And then watching him sort of like get the last laugh. I found him to be a joy to watch. I don't care.
No, I totally agree. I mean, Rick was just like, I think the fact that, you know, like it is exhausting. I have been in that position of being the person who's like the next to go, who people are talking about. And it is freaking miserable. It's like, you feel like cast out. You feel like, I'm here to play Survivor and I can't play Survivor. Like, no one will talk to me. No one will talk strategy with me. And it's very, very frustrating. And, you know, for him to be able to do it with such good humor, with such joy, to make a game out of it, to like do these chases through the woods, to plant the idols. And like, I was not trying to say one thing or the other about the difference between those idols. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot that goes into the difference between those two moments with Angelina and Allison and with Rick. And you know, I think some of it is the way the other contestants were seeing it.
There was a bit of meanness, I will say, to be fair, I just found it interesting, the comparison. I do think when you're watching Lauren think she has it, I mean, I had empathy for Lauren and there was a bit of meanness. I'm just saying that like Rick Devens, really any other person may have just gotten angrier and angrier. And Rick Devens approached every single moment with such joy and he almost freaking won. And I'm like, I'm such a Rick Devens fan.
Oh yeah.
I just think he's lovely.
I mean, but let's talk about Rick, because Rick
let's
did not
talk
play.
About it.
I mean, if we're talking about a classic game of Survivor and we're saying like Gavin, you know, I mean, Rick is like the middle ground, right? Between the edge of, I mean, he's classic version of Survivor either. He's not this like social politicker. He was on the wrong side of almost every vote that he was a part of. You know, and he only got to the end through idols. Granted, he didn't win a lot of immunities as well. So if he had won, he would have been just, you know, not as, it wouldn't have been as extreme a win as Chris's, but it would have been similar. And one thing I thought that Chris did really well, you know, this point about, well, yeah, I was on extinction for 28 days. Julie was immune for 17 days. You know, it's like there's no.
Love that. Paused and said, "That's brilliant." I thought of that as an argument for whoever came back from Edge of Extinction. I was like, if a less you person comes back, they need to make the argument that they played just as much as a comma person who won the first billion things. Sorry, not to. Yeah, keep going.
No, I mean just that. Basically, it's like, you know, there's no. I mean. Except unless like, I mean, it's funny, like Gavin does sort of like represent, because he really didn't do any idol thing. And he really was at the center of almost all these lines, this sort of like really old school way of playing. Rick is this sort of like mid school way of playing. And then like Chris is the ultimate twist. Randomness. Yeah. He is the twist. I love that.
Chris is the twist. I think if Rick had won, the twist would have still gotten a shout out.
Well, yeah, because it brought him.
The twist still would have won. Yeah. But in Chris winning, the twist itself is the sole survivor.
Well, that's really funny.
Yeah. I where did the question start? My goodness.
I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I guess just that like Rick is not, you know, it's not even necessarily a question. Like Rick is not necessarily some like pure like survivor player.
No.
Yeah.
He's quite the opposite. Yeah. But I don't. And listen, I see. A lot of brilliant players who were doing the moves that Rick was getting credit for. When I say I love Rick, it's because I found his heart and his persistence and his enjoyable performance-ness to be fun. I think that it was a little frustrating, especially as a woman who's played, you know, Lauren and Victoria, maybe not a woman, just as someone who, you know, played maybe a bit quieter. They were making a lot of brilliant moves that every tribal Rick was getting credit for. I mean, I'm not saying Rick was a perfect player. You know, the Aurora vote. I'm sure they flipped before he pulled out an idol. Yet Aurora turned to him and gave him credit for that. Or the Ron move. Ron was like, good job, Rick. And it was not Rick. Rick didn't even know Ron was going home. Every person that left said, good move, Rick.
Yeah.
Victoria said that. Lauren said that. I'm not even saying he deserves credit for every vote. I just think
he was a super fun player to watch.
I think he was super fun. And I think like, I mean, what is the second half of the season without Rick Devins hiding behind trees?
Well, it's really interesting to me that these people watched that, you know, the Ghost Island right before it, because like this really is the reverse of Ghost Island.
Yes.
You know, in terms of like people just like desperately trying to correct the mistakes of Ghost Island. You know, they reliably vote out the most threatening person almost every vote. And then with Krista doing that fire making thing, you
that's
know, it's sort of
so
like
interesting,
you know.
that Ghost Island ultimately was the story of two men who stayed loyal to each other till the end. And this was ultimately the season in which no pair stick together till the end.
Yeah. And then Chris sort of, you know, denying Rick his chance to make fire against maybe a lesser fire maker being the ultimate example of that. Right. Like if he had set him up against, you know, Julie or Gavin, I mean, you know,
Rick giving him the idol half back. Because when he came on the after show, I mean, if you don't mind, if we could talk about because I feel like if we're talking about Rick, his ultimate mistake was giving the idol half back. And he admitted that it was an emotional move. But like I said, at the very beginning, every dumb or emotional move that you don't understand is counterbalanced by a brilliant something. And Chris and Rick saying to Jeff Probst after the show, I thought I had devastated Chris. I thought he was ruined. To me, that's Chris playing a brilliant emotional manipulation game to get Rick to give it back. But if Rick doesn't give that back and they get Chris out at five, we're looking at a Rick win, maybe a Gavin win, a Lauren win, a win that makes more sense story-wise. I think mistakes caused a very confusing overall story.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, like, you know, your mileage may vary. Some people hated this season because of the confusion. Some people loved it because of the confusion.
I mean,
all right. So let's get into some of these listener questions.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So Ryan wants to know, hello, hi, can we get the story on the jury votes before we ask any questions about the season? I want to know why exactly it was not closer. Thanks.
Wait, he wants this to be answered before we get into the season. We've already
We've gotten into the season. So let's talk about the jury votes.
Why it wasn't closer, like between Gavin and
We'll talk Prince. About the jury vote. I mean, we've sort of talked about this a little bit in as much as you know, the people who really spent the least time on Edge or no time at all on Edge are the ones who favored Gavin, and the people who spent the most time on Edge are the ones who favored Chris.
Shocking.
Because they were invested in Edge as a legitimate sort of part of the game. The people who went right to Ponderosa, like, they don't care about Edge. Like, Edge to them is always sort of irrelevant. Wentworth being the sole outlier. Why do you think that is? Like, speculate wildly.
I think she was very close to Gavin.
Yeah, Wentworth was.
Wentworth. It seemed to be mentioned in passing a few times. Kelly loves Gavin. I feel like there was a love there that went beyond the thesis statement we set up. But, I mean, why wasn't it closer? First of all, I think Gavin should get some credit. Gavin got some votes. As a zero-vote player.
Yeah, many more than me.
Four votes than I've ever gotten at a Final Tribal. But I really do think that it comes down, to answer Ryan's question, to... The argument Gavin had to make was Chris doesn't deserve to win because Edge of Extinction is not harder or more valuable than playing 39 days, which immediately isolates half the jury. But then if you say Edge of Extinction is valuable and it does deserve to be respected, that also gives the votes to Chris.
Yeah.
I feel like Gavin and Julie had an almost impossible argument in terms of jury management. I also think that, I mean, Chris did not have to sit in front of a jury of people he betrayed. The thesis statement of Survivor.
It really is. It's the hardest part. I mean, I remember walking into Final Tribal. I'm sure you remember this as well. And being like, every one of these people hates me. I have ruined their dreams. Like, they, you know how much it means to each person out there. You know how much they've given up to be there. You know what they're going to do with the money. Like, and then to walk in there and see them glaring at you. And partially they're putting on a show and partially they're really glaring. It is like, you're like, oh my God. Like,
I also got told that there is a bonding experience, and you can speak to this, a bonding experience watching someone's torch get snuffed. As much as you hated them during the game, you know, I got told by a jury person, you know that pain, and that you're automatically, you empathize with them whether or not you hated them. Chris got his torch snuffed.
Right.
Chris got voted out. They all felt that pain. Gavin and Julie never had to experience that. I mean, there's so much that Chris had the leg up on going into that jury pitch. It's almost unimaginable. Like, I can't imagine. Yes. You don't know. You don't know if they're going to shoot daggers at you. You don't know the pain of getting voted out in that season. It's just, I'm not surprised that Chris won. I'm surprised that Chris was able to get there more than that he won.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that all Chris had to do was give them enough of a reason to vote for him. I mean, the great JT Thomas says you need to make the jury feel good about voting for you. And he just had to give them enough. You know, I think I don't think, like, whoever won the Edge, if they had just sort of like limped into the finals, would have necessarily won. But Chris had to, like, say, I did the most that I could with my story. And, you know, and he did, you know, and I mean, I remember in Second Chance, like, everyone was so fixated on the theme. It's like, our second chance, what are you doing about it? Your second chance. And, like, for me, that's why I was, like, talked about Joe all the time. It was like, because, like, if everyone thinks, like, Joe is my second chance, then, like, if I vote out Joe, like, then I will have, like, fulfilled that journey. But, like, you know, I think, like, the players really do think about the theme of the show, and I think it's meaningful to them. I mean, maybe it was different on Millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, Millennials versus Gen X. I just kept thinking, I am a millennial.
Yeah. How am I being a millennial today?
How am I millennialing it? Oh, my gosh. Early in the season, listening to Jeff be like, Gen X, are they on their way out? Millennials, are they always behind their phones? I mean, it's maybe I had a different experience. I don't think the EOE person auto wins, just to be clear.
Yeah.
I think Julie and Gavin being the two people, and Chris of all the people being the person, and what he did that final episode, I just think by the time he gets there, the social aspect of Survivor is balancing loving someone, but not so much that they can never forgive you when you vote them out. It's not just about getting people to love you. It's about it not hurting. I had people afterwards telling me I broke their heart out there. That's the social thing that I failed.
All right, well, let's take some more questions. You can mourn more later.
It's all about me this week.
So Seriously wants to know, how much did the dramatic tribals play into the jurors' decision? Devins and Chris put on a show. Gavin didn't deliver.
I would say watching this season, I mean, not to swing it again back to my own self, but...
No, I mean, you're a reality TV contestant. That's what we do.
Yes. But watching this season was a reminder of my biggest mistake. It doesn't matter if you're actually in control of all the votes. It's what the perception is. And they only see segments. I didn't think about this. I was an idiot. I didn't think all they're seeing is this. They're seeing it like a movie where they only see one picture at a time and it's only tribal. It doesn't matter really how brilliant you're being back at camp unless you're communicating that brilliance right before you kick someone off. It's all these snapshots. And so Even though I agree with Twitter, Victoria, Lauren, Gavin, these were the people controlling the votes. But if Rick is getting the credit and putting on the show, that's the winning. That's how you win Survivor. That's the Cocker. I mean, it's, and yes, it is easier if you, to be very clear, and because I saw this on Twitter a lot, it is easier to put on a show that the jury respects if you are a male, if you are white, if you are straight, if you're a woman and you do similar performance things, if you're anything other than a white straight male. It's a little bit harder to seem like the protagonist, since in society, white straight males are the protagonist. I'm not saying there's not difficulties to that, but it's all about perception and it's all about that show.
Yes. Do you want to take this next one?
That was a long. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, do you want to read it or do you see it?
Oh, I don't see it. Oh,
it's in the screen between us. You see it? Well, I'll just read it.
Okay. I see it.
Tara wants to know.
I see it.
Okay.
At Rob Sesternino, yeah. Rick's tears during that tribal council seem so fake to me. What do you think? Oh, Lord.
I saw a lot of people think that he was putting on a show. It's interesting. I mean, it is possible that he was sort of setting it up a little bit, you know, like giving himself something of an underdog story. I thought it was genuine. I think people in general will like often attribute genuine emotion to strategy on Survivor in a way that, like, you know, people is wrong.
So what? Why? Why would he need to do that? He already wins if he gets to the end. What is the strategy there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every little edge. I mean, just to play devil's advocate, I think it's like, you know, I need to. I've been such a big funny character. Okay. Maybe I need to show a little vulnerability.
You know what?
I don't think so, but I mean,
you're changing my mind a little.
Yeah,
I think I rolled my eyes at this question, but I actually respect and see where it's coming from.
Yeah. All right. Survivor Central wants to know: does this ridiculous ending ensure Edge of Extinction is a one and done twist? Pretty please.
I hope so.
I didn't like it. I mean, honestly, like for me, it was more a problem of like airtime than it was of concept. Like if we had had a 90-minute series and 30 of those minutes were like about Edge of Extinction, you know, the premise of Edge of Extinction was like, let's watch people truly push to the edge. And I just don't think we saw it. It was probably happening. But we didn't, you know, there's just not enough airtime to have like a full episode of Survivor and like a full episode of people truly push to the edge in 44 minutes of television.
I love the Survivor storytellers behind this show, and I usually put my full trust in them. I went back through the season before I podcasted to just refresh on everything. And there was a small strain of a story of Chris before this finale. I know that it may have tipped the hat, so maybe that's why they didn't. This social dynamic shifting, I wish we had seen more of it if this was our winner.
Yeah, I mean, Chris a lot of the time has talked about like how he wanted to play the perfect game, right? That was his kind of story. It was pretty interesting. Like, you know, looking back, like many of his confessionals out of the gate, you know, certainly right when he got to the Edge of Extinction, were about, I wanted to play the perfect game. I have to come to terms with that. Like me being here on the edge is about like me giving up the perfect game. And then he comes back and he plays like the perfect game
for a week. He played a perfect game. Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It is. I love my favorite Chris moment that they did show was him sitting alone in the rock in the middle of the ocean, reading his letter to himself. I just, I love that he had to walk out onto a rock. That's when we should have known he won. What?
Yeah, you think they had everyone go and walk on the rock and they only retroactively put in the...
Absolutely. Reem was on that rock. Dave was on that rock. No, don't say no. This is the rumor starting. I know,
but people are going to believe it. And that's 100% not what happens.
100% what happened. No. I keep looking down during this podcast. I'm going to look straight into the camera.
No.
I say that's 1,000%. Right. Everybody did the rock.
My good Twitter friend, Steven Johnson, wants to know, can we just play Survivor? 16 to 20 people, 39 days, a moderate amount of idols or advantages.
You only want 16 people?
16 to 20. 16 is what the classic Survivor is.
Can we just... I wonder if Survivor gave the fans what they wanted, if there were no idols, if there... Would it be boring? Would we get a majority alliance takeover and shoot everyone? I mean, there are amazing Survivor seasons without too many idols, whatever. But at this point, I mean, I don't know. Is it that thing? Careful what you ask for. Also, well, Jeff Probst is never going to let that happen.
To be fair, Steven was saying a moderate number of idols and advantages. Okay. And I do think, like, you look at
something. I agree.
The best recent Survivor season was David versus Goliath. And that did not, it wasn't like some crazy advantage thing. You know, like, there were not a ton of advantages in that season. I mean, there were so many slingshots.
Every time a David got an advantage, they go, this is the slingshot that's going to take down a Goliath. Yeah. I do think that I will agree with your friend that when you get to too many, you get the Suri tribal. And it's just like, or you get the twist that wins. The twist has won the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, the Australian Survivor Season 2 had, like, you know, there were some twists, but not that many. It's such a balance. And it does start to feel kind of cheap when it's every episode there's like two or three things coming out.
I do think that's what some of the frustration with Rick Devons was. It wasn't about Rick. It was the fact that it felt like every 5 minutes he found an idol.
But we saw him putting in the work. Like, we saw the other people not putting
in the work. I'm not mad at Rick. Yeah. I am just saying, I think part of the frustration was people wanted to see some of these strategists be able to flex, and they never really got to because it kept getting sort of cock blocked by all these idols.
And I also think that, like, you know, the work of strategy, which is just like a ton of like grinding, right? It's a ton of small conversation.
Oh my God, yes.
Just doesn't really translate to TV in the same way that a big flashy idol play does. So, like, just because we don't see it as much doesn't mean it's not happening.
Right.
So I'm just saying
the grind this season didn't pay off as much because of all these idols.
Totally. Elizabeth wants to know, so the Sia Award is a legit thing now. We didn't talk about this. Rick wins the second biggest prize of the season.
$100,000.
Crazy. That's like, well, way more than $50,000, right? Is that right?
And didn't, yeah. Also, the big twist, it didn't go to Wendy for the chickens.
But it did not always go to the chickens, people. I mean, like, Davey had nothing to do with chickens.
I just feel like as soon as Wendy released the chickens, I saw a million tweets being like, she's going for that Sia money.
Yeah, but, you know, Wendy quit too. Maybe if Wendy had stuck around and, like, you know, continued her journey through the rest of the show, she would have gotten the Sia money. But I think once she walked off, like, that Sia money was the
most. I'm happy that Rick and Sia are going to have a morning show together. I'm not mad about it.
I mean, I hope that this does something for Rick. You know, like, I mean, not that, like, he doesn't have an awesome career now. I have no idea what his career is like.
He looked so handsome in his little suit.
He looks so handsome. Yeah.
So handsome. Yeah. I feel like Rick Devons has proved that he is dynamic television, and I hope he gets a great job. And we learned, I already knew this, but that Dave and Cochran write together.
Yes. And it continued the string of always having a Cochran shout out. It's usually when Jeff walks down the aisle.
Oh my God, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a shout out to Cochran in the finale episode. It's either they'll, like, just go to Cochran, oh, we've got Cochran here, or Jeff, like, walking down the aisle will say Cochran. But I legitimately think that there hasn't been a season in, like, 4 or 5 years where, like, the name Cochran has not occurred in the finale.
That's so funny. I almost made a Bachelor comparison that nobody cares about. It's like how Ashley I, this one contestant from years ago, is still relevant somehow.
Okay. All right. Darren
will get that.
So I'm sure there's crossover. Darren wants to know, ask Hannah if she was on the jury in her season, who she voted for between Adam and Ken?
Between Adam and Ken? Yeah. Just the two of them?
Yeah. Final two. You're out of three.
Oh, I feel bad.
Well,
I would have agreed with my jury. I would have given my vote to my brother, my Jew chosen tribe. Adam. We're chosen by God. You sort of have to choose them for the vote.
Why? If you've already been chosen by God, why do you have to like add another choice to that?
I'm just kidding, too. No one come at me. I would. I mean, I feel like if it's those two, I thought about all the different combinations. There's only two people in my season who I wouldn't have known who I would have chosen. But other than that, I feel like every combination I thought, I never got to be a jury person. I had cute outfits. I was ready.
Yeah, it's fun being on the jury. All right, City Girl in the Country wants to know, how do they not go to the audience for Rob Cesternino's Ream impression just then? Jeff's was cringeworthy. Hashtag I should be producing the finale. Side note, Ream looks 10 years younger tonight. I mean, she spent like a month on the edge of extinction. That can I'm sure that was not, you know, great for her skin.
Ream is amazing. I did feel bad because, first of all, Jeff did a great job. He hit a lot of people in a shorted finale. I did feel bad because Ream was crying and then Jeff did his impression of her that was like, grow a pair or something, dude. But it was juxtaposed to this woman crying. So
it's like human being weeping. And he's like, do the funny voice.
Do the thing we like about you. Be the cartoon.
I think it would be hard to fault Jeff for not like indulging in emotional moments. Like that is his bread and butter.
Oh my goodness. I felt like this finale, he was like, I'm going to make everyone cry. He was like, Julia, tell us about your thing. Ream, tell it. I mean, he was great. I think Jeff is a magician.
All right. Let's just take a few more questions. Do you want to read the next one?
Yes, I'll read the next one. Let's see if I've learned how to click on it. I'm going to click. Okay. At Hannah Lil Nesson, at Stephen Fishback.
Say the winner.
Oh, sorry. Near Pup, at Near Pup says. And his picture is of a puppy cartoon. Mm. The winner of the fire making challenge has now won 3 out of the 4 seasons and was a close runner up the 4th season since the twist was introduced. Should players go away to be the one to go to the fire making challenge? Hashtag RHAP. All right, I'm going to click out of it now. That's a great question. Steven, what do you think?
That's a really great question. I think I would always still choose like the lock on the final, but it is a good question. And you know, now if you do it, it's a little bit less cool, right? Now that Chris has done it, it's a little bit less cool. Like give up immunity and do it. But it is this thing that we talk about all the time of like, you've got to show the jury of you doing big things to get there. And I think with Rick, you know, what made Rick such a great gift to Chris was that there was no ambiguity. You know, most seasons there's ambiguity. Most seasons you're like, well, the votes could go this way and I could pick up that person's vote. But like the jury was literally applauding every week, applauding Rick every week. You know, Chris was on the jury for a while, right? And he got to see that the jury was applauding Rick. So like he knew that if Rick got to the end, then he would lose. So the only thing that mattered was eliminating Rick. So, I mean, I think that was like this clarity that you would almost never get in a season of like, I have to do this because otherwise I lose. And if I do this, it's awesome for my game.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you can, like if it works out for you, the thing about fire making that's so scary is that there's so much, even if you're a great fire maker, you can have a bad day and you can still, mm-hmm. I mean, Rodney, you know, I think Rodney was a great fire maker and he lost fire making.
I mean, I just love that this fire making challenge was foreshadowed in like episode 4, when someone asked Dave, hey Dave, how are you doing on that fire? And Dave said, not as good as Chris. And that was some editor going,
yeah, I don't know.
I just
love
that it was foreshadowed. It was. Yeah. Don't take that away from me.
I mean, sorry. Yes, that's a great catch. All right, Becca wants to know, did they carve stones with Rob and Sandra's faces? Let's talk about the next season. I actually missed the title of the next season because
I can tell you what it is.
Tell me.
I'm going to, I wrote it. Hold on. I brag that I could tell you what it is and then I'm opening which I want to make sure. This is going to make you laugh though. What do people hate about, what are people frustrated about in this season?
Edge of Extinction.
No, it's called Survivor, Island of the Idols.
I mean, it's pretty cool that they carved a statues of Bust. Robin Sanders' head. What do you think? What do you think of this idea?
First of all, it's hilarious that, I mean, we got a question tonight being like, there might be too many idols. And Jeff Probst is almost like, no, this is Survivor, Island of the Idols. I know it's a play on the word idol.
You're saying that they're lazy, Robin Sanders.
I'm saying, idol. I'm...
Sorry, no. It's really stupid. Really stupid.
No, it's a great joke. Thanks. We've just been talking for so long. Earlier in the podcast, I would have been cracking up. I love giant heads of Rob and Sandra. I'm a I'm a fan, personally. I don't know if you know this about me. I like when things are funny, yeah, unintentionally or intentionally on Survivor. I think that the more humor Survivor adds into the show, the more I feel like it feels fresh. This idea of advisors is fascinating. So Rob and Sandra are basically having a romantic beach vacay together for 39 days.
I need to go rewatch the preview because I was preparing for this, but like, are they, and finishing my blog, but are they on the same beach?
I assumed you win your way to them. That's what I would guess.
But are they, it's not like Rob or Sandra, like they're each in their little hut and you go to that beach and like get advice from both of them?
It's a very religious experience. I think you have to sort of earn your way to speak to the gods. And then Rob and Sandra come out
from together. That's all my question. Is it like individually or together?
I feel like they would give very different advice. So I like the idea that they're together. I hope they're together and they just bicker.
Maybe you like choose which one to go to. And then, oh my God, you went to the Sandra hut, but Rob is living in the Sandra hut. Cause like, he's like, you know,
I love that. It's like, who do you think advice you need? I will say I'm a fan of pure newbie seasons, and this seems like as close as we're gonna get. I don't think Sandra or Rob can win. Can they come in at 5 and win?
Well, that's what they did in Big Brother, right? Where the mentees, like halfway through the season, were able to like come into the season and then became players, and like one of them almost won.
Oh no, is that what's gonna happen? I just figure, oh, that'd be amazing. Final four, Sandra or Rob win their way.
Yeah.
They take their heads, the heads of the idols, and they try to win. Listen, I'm excited for a whole crop of new newbies. I'm hopeful.
All right. Well, coming up, first of all, like I don't know like if I should wrap up first or then do the promotion. Hannah, this has been an amazing podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's a long night with the finale and everything, and thank you to all you listeners. Coming up,
thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Do the promotion first.
I have a new episode of Paraphrase that just came up, my podcast where I interview authors. This one is about the novel The Old Drift by the author Namwali Sirpelt, who's actually a friend of mine and a classmate of mine from Yale. She wrote what is now being called the Great Zambian Novel. Salman Rushdie wrote a review about it on the cover of the New York Times Book Review. It's getting tremendous press, and I highly recommend this book. And there's if you want to like an intro to it, check out paraphrasepodcast.com. Rob is right now at the finale. He's interviewing the final six. Final six, I guess he's interviewing. So he'll have all that.
Hopefully he has more questions for Chris than Jeff Probst did.
Yeah, I'll have some more time. We got News AF coming up. It looks like Aubrey Plaza in a shower they'll be talking about. So Rob, Danny, and Tyson will be talking about Aubrey Plaza in a shower. We got the Bachelorette recap, the wrap up coming up as well. So lots of exciting things. RuPaul's Drag Race season 11. Check for that. The episode 11 recap, and the Survivor South Africa Island of Secrets preview. Not to be confused with the Island of Idols. Survivor South Africa's Island of Secrets with the wonderful Shannon and guest Liana will be coming up. And then once again, we have Rob live from the Survivor 38 finale exit interviews. From tonight's wild show, we have the BB Can postseason LFC roundtable. That's also coming up, I think, tomorrow. And then, of course, we will have the Wiggle Room with the great Josh Wiggler.
I love Josh Wiggler.
And then, of course, we will also have the RHAP B&B with Eric Stein. So the Mike Bloom and Mike Barassi will be talking with Eric Stein and of course, we have David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis, who will answer the question.
Why X lost?
Why X won?
Oh!
Why Chris won? When they really interested to see what they say about that. It will be I wonder how many of David's rules Chris broke along the way. Probably all of them, since he's also lost. And then we have the finale. TWIS with Andrea Belke coming up. So geez,
this is
crazy.
She's everywhere. There's more press about Survivor than days Chris played on Survivor.
Oh my God. I mean, think about this incredible lineup that Rob has gifted to all of us across basically every facet of the show.
We're so lucky.
Which is all the more reason to become a patron. Rob has a website.com/patron. It's the patrons who keep Rob going and, you know, put food on his table, feed his children. So if you care about Rob's children, you'll become a patron. And it's great. He generates so much extra content. Patrons also have the first run, the first go at live events.
They have secret like chats too.
I guess secret chats. And it seems like it's such a cool community to be a part of. And, I highly recommend if you're not, just check it out. Just go to robhasawebsite.com/patron, you know, take a look, see, all right. And, I think that's it. Hey, anything else?
I just want to congratulate everyone in the cast. I know it sounds corny, but it's so hard what they do. And we all sit here well-fed and talking to microphones about them. And I just, congratulations to them on doing it.
Yeah. And congratulations to you, Hannah, yes, for becoming an honorary know-it-all.
I'm so honored. Thank you for having me. It was so nice to talk to you for the first time.
I know. This is crazy. I feel like this was good. We could have a future conversation. This was a real success.
I think maybe the next conversation, we don't even include a live audience. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
What's the point of a conversation if there's no?
You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Guys, the next time I call Steven, we will go live again.
Yeah. All right. This was super fun, Hannah. Have a great
night. Thank you so much. And I'm honored to have gotten to be a part of it.
Oh, I'm honored to that you were a part of it. All right. That's it. End transmission.
End. How do I end it? Survivor, know it all.